I'm a bad man, taking on the world with a gun in hand. Find my trail where the blood ran, 'cause I'm a bad man. I'm a bad man, taking my time in the killing fields, ripping the cover from the cell and seal. Yeah, I'm a bad man.
Yeehaw, folks, how we doing? One of the Live or Preferably Dead is back again. Myself, Vaughn Kohlmeyer, and my compatriot, my compañero, Mr. Stephen Thompson. How are you, Stephen?
I am just peachy. How about yourself, brother?
Good, I'm good. So, tonight, we're tackling another Italian spaghetti western where I fuck up the names. But I think we got a little of a good... I kind of walked with you before we started. And kind of just, you know, phonetically pushed out some of these names, these films. But tonight we're talking about the 1967 film Bandidos, directed by Massimo Dellamano. It's Enrico Salerno, Terry Jenkins, Valentini. I know I'm fucking that up. Maria Martin. That's pretty much the kind of the main head cast. You go into a little bit about Dellamano's kind of history. He was originally a cinematographer whose most notable films as a cinematographer were stuff like the first two Dollars films, Fistful and A Few Dollars More. Mm-hmm. He also directed Bullets Don't Anger, Bullets Don't Agree, which is an interesting little film, and a couple other films. But you can definitely tell with this being his first film, and some of the things I read about it was that he actually shot the film and like lit it. So he was kind of pretty much taking up the whole cinematographer role with it, which probably also helped with the cost of the film, you know, because the Italians are always known for making these films as cheap as possible because it's the flavor of the month. So, but he also directed a bunch of really interesting films through the short period of time he was alive. Venus and Furs, which would be come out a couple years after this, Dorian Gray. And then the two, What You Have Done, these two Polizietteschi films, which a lot of people love. What Have You Done to Solange and What Have You Done to Your Daughters, which are two really interesting flicks. And I think there's like a third film directed by Sergio Martino, which is kind of like in the same vein of it. It was a film that I think, he was going to work on before he tragically died in a car accident. In 76, and a film that I really liked that he made was called The Cursed Medallion, which was released here as The Night Child. And that's it's a really freaky fucking film starring Joanne Cassidy and Richard Johnson. He was, like I said, he was a cinematographer first, and you can definitely tell in this film that you're working with a cinematographer on his first film. And he kind of got in, this is his only Western. And like, he kind of went on to make like, you know, like science, like kind of, you know, like Polizietteschi films and kind of like adaption. So like, and, like, there's, you know, his version of Dorian Gray and stuff like that.
And for this, I mean, Venus and Furs was one I was familiar with. I'd seen that a couple of times. And then What Have You Done to Solange? Yeah. But yeah, I was mostly familiar with him from his work with Marcone. I mean, Sergio Leone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yes. And
you can definitely I say Morricone, I'm already talking about
Leone.
Yeah.
And with those two films, you can definitely tell he took from what he learned from those two films and the other films he had worked on, and shot the shit out of this film.
There's a couple scenes like early on, especially the train sequence.
Yep.
The where like he's doing some of the Leone tricks where he like kind of changes the framing of the film by shooting through four ways and that kind of stuff. And of course that goes all the way back to John Ford. But damn it, Alice.
Yeah. Don't mind us. We're sitting here at the prairie freaking with the dogs screaming, yelling. So, like you said, the film starts off with a train sequence. We get introduced to our three main characters inadvertently. We don't really know that Terry Jenkins is going to be a character up until a little bit later in the film. Well, we're introduced to Enrique Salerno's character, Richard Martin, and Valentino Valentini's character, Billy Kane. You have this beautiful, you have these panning shots of the train driving, train going down these kind of barren straits. You have all these kind of banditos, I guess you could say, coming pretty much tackling it all at once. Like just this big train heist is happening. Billy Kane is kind of this ruthless, kind of head of this whole crowd, this whole group of guys. And he pretty much leaves nobody alive. He kills pretty much everyone he can, except for Richard Martin. And there's, you can tell right then and there that there's history between these two men. The fact that this is one thing I like about the Billy Kane character, because we always have to have some kind of weird thing in Italian Westerns where like either the good guy has like this inability to kind of shoot, like in, was it in The Great Silence, where he won't shoot somebody unless they shoot first. Billy Kane, he has this insane marksmanship to the point where he can shoot off guys' guns from the holster, like just pretty much slice it right off as if it was cut off with a knife. Mm-hmm. And completely cause them, inactive to be able to shoot them back. And there's this kind of talk back before between Kane and Martin, about how he used to be his Martin was Kane's mentor. Look what's happened to you. He's kind of, he went from kind of doing trick shooting and kind of working with him, going, town to town, to kind of taking up this pack of madmen and kind of just now robbing anyone he can, because he makes, you make a lot more money robbing people than you actually can make, showing off your wares. And, Kane kind of pretty much just, gives him a warning by shooting him in his hands, right through the palms, which completely destroys Martin's inability to shoot any kind of weapon. And you see that throughout the whole rest of the film, his shakiness, even when he's trying to pour a drink for himself, like his hands just, he has no ability anymore in his hands to do anything, which completely ruins his, way of life and all that other stuff. And like you said, there's a scene after they've shot Martin, and they're kind of do this whole pan of all the bodies of all the dead people, either the banditos who've been killed who are out out around the train, or the people who are in the train cars
and out the windows,
out the windows and out the entrances and exits and stuff like that. And they pretty much massacred everybody, and they left him alive, but he's been incapacitated. We pan into a certain period of time, so maybe a couple of months, maybe a couple of years. They don't really get to, explain that. But Martin is going to continue doing what he was doing before, but he's now trained a new protege to kind of continue the act. And he's the ringleader. While they're, in one town, there's a bunch of guys going to start shit with them. They kill his new protege because he's kind of a, he's kind of loud mouth, and kind of he gets into a bit of shit that he probably shouldn't have. But then you meet Terry Jenkins' character, who is kind of like, a character with no name, because he we don't really get his name until the very end of the film. Mm-hmm. But the character that Martin is kind of running around with this other protege is called Ricky Schott. He kind of like, very kind of entertainment style character, because that's what he's doing. He's doing trick shooting. So it's like, why not call him Ricky Schott for the hell of it? Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Terry Jenkins' character doesn't help Martin, helps Martin ultimately but the protege is killed. So Martin kind of takes him in and kind of shows him the ropes of how to do everything. And Jenkins' character is not a very good shot at first. I like the fact that he uses dueling pistols for all these things, for all his trick shotting stuff. And he even makes Martin's character makes a comment. You can shoot pigs and engines with six shooters, but you need dueling pistols to do exactly what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. For the precision.
Yeah. And like, I like when you get introduced to these characters, you get introduced to Salerno's character, Richard Martin. And he's, you know, at the beginning, he's this very kind of, you know, well-to-do. He's kind of up his own ass, I guess you can say. Like, his farts don't smell. You know, because like they go, he, you know, he's like, oh, you know, they're telling him like, hey, can you, you know, do not use the pistols while you're in the train. He's like, oh, and he shows him a bunch of targets. And he's like, so you get this kind of this cloud between the two men, you know, the fact that one was the heir apparent and one was the guy who trained him. And it seems like the teacher has become the student, I guess you can say.
Yes, the student has become the master.
Yeah, and it's like
only the master of evil, Darth.
Right, and I like that thing. I like the fact that like you have, you know, Valentini's character is this very kind of, he doesn't say a lot of words. He's much more active about just taking out the guys he needs to take out.
Yeah,
he's more into shooting people than actually kind of giving these soliloquies. Like with Salerno's character, he kind of goes on these great tirades of just explaining stuff to Ricky Schott, to Terry Jenkins' character, about like, you know, the rights and wrongs about shooting and how, you know, you shouldn't take it for granted and stuff like that. And you get all this kind of, you know, and then you get introduced to other characters. You get like introduced to that Mexican gang who's looking for Billy Kane because they have a score to settle with him.
Because they were originally, it was Kane's gang and Munoz.
Yeah.
Who had teamed up to rob this train. And then afterwards, Billy was like, well, I've used you for what I need you for. Y'all can get the fuck away.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, so you're better than us. And so the Mexicans kind of hold a grudge
for
the rest of the movie.
Right. And you find out with Ricky, what Ricky's kind of thing is, that Ricky's kind of an escaped convict. And you find out that he's an escaped convict and kind of Salerno's character kind of keeps it to himself. He's like, I know who you are. I saw, you know, because there's a guy roaming the countryside with a captured one of the other captured convicts that kind of escaped with him. And he's like, you know, if you see any of these guys, just tell me. And I'm guessing he wasn't looking very good at the one posters he had because he's got another guy right there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, and when Martin finds this out, he goes, you know, I'll keep your secret, you know, like, because he doesn't explain to him why he's on the run. He knows he's on the run. He could use the money, but he's like, I'd much rather have you as an adversary than as an ally than an adversary.
Yeah, exactly. And plus he's kind of driven in this mission that he has, that he's going to train somebody to get even with Billy for shooting him in the hands.
Right. Yeah.
This is kind of his motivation for everything.
Yeah.
The trick shooting and making the money, that's how they get by. Mm-hmm. But his real goal is to train somebody to be the next Billy Kane and kill him.
Pretty much take
so,
him over.
And so he's playing the long game here versus just turning Terry Jenkins in and getting the reward.
Yeah. And I like the how this film kind of moves as it goes. Like, for a 90-minute film, it doesn't feel like it really slogs. I mean, there's a little bit of in the middle with the Mexican gang when we get reintroduced to that. But you understand why that gang is brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also that kind of like that betrayal that happens between Ricky and Martin's Ricky and Martin, where we have the idea that Salerno's character is working towards getting Ricky to be the guy who takes out Billy. Right. But it's not really said.
And it looks like Billy is going along with it.
Yeah. And so when Ricky kind of, he doesn't be, like, Martin thinks he betrays him, but it's not like he's not betraying him for, you know, a reason. He's betraying him for a good reason. And the reason is that Ricky was on the train. We see him at the beginning. He gets kicked off the train because he doesn't have a ticket. And as he gets kicked off the train, Billy steals his knife from him and kills one of the porters. And so because they found his knife on the train, they accused him of being one of the people who caused, you know, the this whole fucking massacre, and they wrongfully put him in jail. So when he escaped, he's been looking for Billy to kind of clear his name. He didn't want to, he doesn't want to fight Billy, doesn't want to kill Billy. He just wants to take someone in with him so he can go to the local town and show him and say, hey, this guy can prove that I was never part of this whole thing. And Billy kind of takes to it, kind of understands what he's, you know, because he doesn't want to kill him, because you have that whole scene with like the Mexican gang where they pay him a bunch of money and they say, hey, we're going to pretty much, you know, kill Billy while you kind of, you know, be the scapegoat, I guess you can say.
Yeah, you distract him and
we'll shoot him in the back.
We'll shoot him in the back. And they fill that whole saloon full of Mexicans.
Yeah.
And there is that one really cool, there's the cool shots where the one guy shoots a hole in the brim of his sombrero.
Uh-huh.
And then like puts it down over his face like he's sleeping.
Sleeping.
He's peering through that hole. Yeah. And so they're doing the shots where like all you can see is this eyeball moving back and forth being, yeah, you know, in this hat. And then they also do the shots from the other side. So it's kind of a neat little,
that's cool. Kind of, and then like
stuff.
And in that scene where Ricky is at the end of the bar and he calls her a drink and they push the bottle down the bar, and it's a tracking shot where it follows with the bottle as it goes up to him, which is always just fantastic. And then there's like a couple of scenes where we have from Billy's perspective, where it goes like the point of view of Bill, like Billy, where it's like he's looking around and stuff like that in this after a fight has happened. And you're like, oh, that's fucking awesome. And you can definitely tell that, you know, a cinematographer is making this film. And like I said, I read is that he just took over that whole kind of thing because he was so used to it because he didn't want to fuck it up, I guess. You know, like, you know, it's his first directing job, but like trying to do it as best you can. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just I like the overall cast. I like the fact that we get introduced to like what's her name? I can't remember right now. Maria Martin.
Yeah,
Betty Starr.
She was in the Hellbenders that we watched.
Yeah, when we watched a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And like when she gets introduced, it's kind of like I guess you're gonna have to have like that kind of female character to kind of hold on to the storyline. You know what I mean? Because she's the only one who really survives the whole rest of the film. So like I said. Ricky kind of goes to Billy and tells Billy what's his plan. Like I just want to go to your guys, take one of your men. I don't want to kill you. I don't want to fight you. I don't want to do any of that shit. I just want to take one of your men and bring him back into town and show and tell the sheriff that, hey, I didn't cause anything. I want to be cleared. I want to go back home.
Right.
And Billy's fine with it, even though he does, you know, he's a pretty diabolical guy. He takes the three lowest guys, which I liked when he was kind of introducing some of the guys. Like you have Doc, who's like, you know, he can help you with wounds. He can pull teeth. You got Dirty, who's pretty much, you know, fleas scatter away from him. you have, what's his name? Dave the Bastard or Joe the Bastard or something like that, where he's known for, you know, shacking up with 10-year-olds. And I love how his excuse is like, well, I thought she was 12. She was
12. Yeah. I was like,
and like those guys are all good because he ends up putting them in the corner. And then the three guys that are sitting around who are playing cards are like, well, you know what? Okay. One of you guys is going to do it. And I want you guys all to pick a card. Whoever's got the lowest card is going to be it. And you have that whole tense scene where the one guy picks, the other guy picks, and the other guy's holding the card in his hand, like just kind of staring at it. And as he's about to put it down, Billy just kills the other two guys and goes, all right, you're going with him. Like, it's like, okay, what the fuck? Like, I understand the point of that whole thing, but it's like, it's such a great, like, tense little moment.
Yeah. Cause all these guys sold Billy out to the Mexicans to begin with.
Yeah.
They're the mm-hmm. one. They all went to the Mexicans and said, this is where Billy's going to be. Yeah. And then the Mexicans set up the ambush and but they were smart enough to say, yeah, no, we're not going with you to kill him. We're not stupid, mm-hmm. but we will. Yeah. We'll let you go kill him.
Yeah. Right. And like, the thing is, I liked all this and, you know, he takes the man and he goes to see Martin, a Salerno's character. Explain to him why he's doing this. And like, you have this scene where after Ricky and Billy have kind of like made a truce in this and kind of gone off to hit where his men are. Martin is just hiding outside the saloon and is kind of watching all this happen. And he's so downtrodden and so kind of hurt by this, like not angry, but he's upset and disappointed by it all. Because he felt like he found a person, like a kinship with someone that he thinks he could have used to get his revenge. And when Ricky comes back with the prisoner, he explains to him why he's doing this to him. And he's like, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And like, I got to do what I got to do. And so they pretty much, you know, Martin goes into the camper that he has, because he's using that as kind of like his stage for the whole gun show. And Ricky and the prisoner stay outside, sleep outside, because he can't trust the guy, because he may try to, you know, in the middle of the night, kind of like try to escape. Mm-hmm. So when he like gets up in the morning and he's trying to get Martin, and he wants to talk to Martin before he heads into town, and Martin's already left, and Martin took a shotgun and sawed off the barrel to make it more powerful, and you see kind of some shots of Martin trying to shoot the shotgun as best he can, which seems like his best bet to kind of get Billy. He can't shoot handguns anymore, but if he can get a shot with a shotgun, he can probably kill the man instantaneously. And that's kind of a 50-50, because like I said, he's got two holes right in the middle of his palms. You know, that shit does not fucking, you know, it fucks all your hands up, you know, makes you pretty much, you know, a cripple in your hands, which is oh so great. Which is kind of a trope for most like spaghetti Westerns, most Westerns. Oh,
yeah.
It
happened. I mean, it happened in Django. It happened in Fistful of Dollars. That's the big thing. The hero gets his hands busted up.
Mm-hmm. And so he goes, so you have Martin's character going into town because he knows what's going to happen. Billy's character has kind of made pact with the rest of his men that we're going to go into town and we're going to rob the bank and going to leave and kind of just split. And if it means we have to kill a bunch of people, I have to kill a bunch of people. And Billy's first thing before he gets into town is he goes and kills the sheriff while the sheriff's sleeping, because he knows what Ricky's trying to do. And he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want this guy who's being wrongfully accused of being part of the party to kind of go and say, hey, I'm not really the guy you're looking for. You know, clear me so I can go home. Which, you know, is just great because, you know, like it just you keep pushing the fact that Billy's not a trustworthy guy, but he's just a fucking real ruthless prick.
Yeah, because he could have left it alone, went on about his business.
Yeah, he could have just went and robbed.
He had to fuck it up for Ricky.
Yeah, he could have robbed the bank and fucking just went off. And so, you know, Martin goes in there, tries to confront him. He gets killed ultimately. Because he just can't shoot for shit because, you know.
Yeah, he ends up shooting the wrong dude.
The holes in the hands, that fucking happens. And so you have this, and then you have this, like, this big fight out between, like, some of the surviving people in the town, and then Ricky gets into town and kind of, you know, has it out with Billy, and you have these kind of, this kind of just slow duel going on throughout the town, which one thing I liked about it is that not in many Westerns you see the good guy and the bad guy reloading their guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always kind of
unlimited shots.
Yeah. It's always a six shooter that seems like it's like a Gatling gun, where it never has to be reloaded. And Dalimano really puts in the shots of kind of just in weird angles where you can actually see them kind of reloading their bullets into the guns after they shot a bunch of times, because they're shooting from when they start out, they're shooting from pretty much 20 feet away or 30 feet away, pretty much across the street. And you know, they kind of are just kind of slowly dueling it out. They're kind of hiding in places. They end up in a barn with a lot of stuff in it. And slowly just kind of ink each other out. And ultimately what happens
that's something that I really liked about this movie was the fact that they didn't go for the whole standard, you know, face off in the middle of the street. This is like a cat and mouse.
It starts out like that. I like that. Yeah. I like how it starts out in the middle of the street and then they both run to their collective spots and kind of try to shoot it out. And then they're like, you know, like Billy's like, well, he shoots this barrel. And he's like, hey, when all the water goes out, we'll both come out. And then the water all comes out, and then there's this click. There's like this two tick. And he's like, did you think I was going to trust you? And he's like, okay. And then they kind of slowly kind of, and like I said, like they're both kind of going through the town, kind of like inking through corners. And then they both get in this barn and they kind of start shooting it out in these small compacted areas, which I really liked. Missing just to kind of fuck with each other. And it ultimately, you know, proves that Billy isn't as clever as he thinks he is. And you have the kind of, you know, the whole kind of, you know, the raison d'etre, I guess you can say, of the whole thing. Billy gets his comeuppance, and then Ricky kind of, we finally get to know Ricky's full name, which I think is a great kind of turn at the end of it when he goes to Betty, and Betty's like, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, she's pretty much like, you're going to have to run forever. And he's like, well, I mean, like, that's what I'm going to have to do. Like, what can I have no more, I have no more witnesses. Like, and she asks him for his real name. And when he says his real name, you know, she says, I'm going to tell whoever comes here to kind of whatever kind of law enforcement comes to the town to kind of clean up this mess, that you died while, you know, trying to defend against Billy. So the man can finally be free.
And then you can just take that Ricky Schott name and go on with it
and keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
this. Pretty cool ending.
No, yeah, it was really, and the thing is, it was down to the line. It was, you really had no time. Like, that's one thing I like about it. The movie's about an hour 34, and the death of the bad guy is at like the hour 33. So you have like 1 minute left to kind of give you this small bit of like this epilogue at the very ending that kind of just wraps it all up nicely, and then you cut right to credits. Mm-hmm. And it's like that. And I was like, oh shit, that's great. Like, that's like, and I was kind of worried that it was going to pull the traditional kind of Italian spaghetti Western style where it's like the good guys got the upper hand, and you get shot in the back, like any guys. Like, and I was like, oh shit. Cause it was, as I'm looking, I checked the time and I'm like, oh my God, we got like 2 minutes left. Like, no way in hell this is going to be resolved where the bad guy doesn't lose. Like, where the bad guy loses. And I'm like, shit, like this is, but it's 67. So it's like, it's still in that time period where Italian Westerns are trying to still ape American Westerns. So a lot of them are kind of like the good guy will prevail.
You know? Yeah. They hadn't gotten into the whole sort of
really
great silence and
in the early 70s when he just got like, really was like, well, we're running out of ideas. Why don't we make them really fucking bleak? All right, good. Let's go. Keep rolling out that fucking bandwagon. Like, but it's, I really enjoyed this film. Like, and I think it's, like I said, like I'm a kind of a fan of this guy's work. Because I've seen enough of his stuff where you can kind of see as a director, like what he was going for in each film. You know, he's always, and it's like, and just as this being his first film, you can definitely tell like the inkling, the kind of the patchwork of what he's going to do with the rest of his filmography before he tragically died in a car accident is all out there in this first film. And he's a journeyman filmmaker, like a lot of great Italian directors. They pretty much just go where the money goes, you know, like it's like, okay, I can't, my next job is this because this is what's really big, or like, you know, Polizia Teschi's because this is what's really big, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, it's like exorcism type films, which is the Cursed Medallion is kind of like that. It's kind of like an exorcism clone. It's like you just go where the money goes. And a lot of those directors, you know, even like some of the bigger guys, you know, like you have Sergio Leone, who was able to kind of do whatever the hell he wanted, you know, and then saw where the crest ended and kind of went to do something else and kind of just, but he viewed, he walked his own path. And, but you have guys like Carabucci, who, you know, is a, you know, big favorite of mine. He loved making films, but he knew that his limitations were with the productions. You know what I mean? Like he just couldn't do whatever the fuck he wanted to, but he could do like within the same genre. Like once, you know, when the Westerns ran out, he went to comedies, like, and, you know, or this or that, like, and he just went where the money went, but he was able to make films in his own kind of, you know, mindset and kind of push his own opinions on, you know, his real beliefs and whatever in the films. without actually having to try to, like, you know, branch a path on his own. It's just like that with Fulci, like all those directors. You get a handful of Italian directors that were able to branch out and kind of, you know, make a name for themselves. But a lot of them, like the hundreds of directors that were around, they all made films because they were kind of like studio, you know, they were like on the studio take. So like, okay, we need a director for this. Are you available? Fine.
Yeah.
We'll do it. And if you're not available, have someone else do it. Who cares? You know, so I really like what this guy was doing with this film and kind of whatever he did after this.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, I kind of have mixed feelings about this one because there's a lot about it I do enjoy. Okay. And it does kind of check off a lot of the, going down the checklist. Okay. You got the mentor or, relationship with the student from say Death Rides a Horse or For a Few Dollars More. You've got kind of like we said, you know, the whole thing with the hands getting fucked up because that's kind of a staple of these movies. There was a lot of stuff that I was like, okay, yeah, I've seen it, but at least they're doing something different with it. I think this is one of those movies I think would have benefited from another 10, 15 minutes just to kind of flesh out some more stuff because they really kind of rushed the, like the training of Ricky Schott.
Yeah.
I mean, if, you know, you look at a movie like something more modern, if you look at like Django Unchained, you know, that kind of relation, that it's that same kind of relationship that Django has with, Christoph Waltz, whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's that same kind of relationship. I would have liked to have seen more of that. I mean, because I thought it was a really cool relationship these two guys had, and would like to have seen more of that. When Maria Martine shows up, she's just kind of like, oh, hey, Ricky, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you don't know this. This is not the same Ricky Schott that was in the last scene because that Ricky Schott is dead. This is a new Ricky Schott. You don't know this guy. You don't have a relationship with him.
It does feel
and
like
so, they, and they don't really get the chance to build that.
Yeah.
So I think if you have had a little bit more building these relationships between those three characters,
all right,
would have really added a lot of intensity to
the ending. You're right, because like I feel like that character does feel like she's met him before, but like it feels like it's just like we need to have like a witness for the ending. You know what I mean? Like you can tell
she's there so that the last minute of the film could happen.
Yes, right.
It was never fleshed out along the way. That she shows up a couple times.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, what is the nature of this relationship? Because as far as I can tell, they're just strangers. She knows Martin, Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's where Ricky Martin got his name. But anyway, but yeah, she knows Richard Martin. She knows him as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
But the whole relationship with Ricky Schott was just kind of like, kind of thrown in there.
Yeah.
And I think if those two relationships had been able to give it a little more room to breathe, it would have made for a better movie. But you're talking about, you know, how is that going to affect the pacing? Because this is a pretty fast paced movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got something going on all the damn time.
Yeah,
and the breaks in the action are pretty short. Like I said, Ricky is trained to be a gunslinger in what, one or two scenes. He gets one scene where he shoots. I mean, it was a great scene where he's training, shooting the fuse off the dynamite, and Martin's just standing there smoking a cigar next to the dynamite. Mm-hmm. You got to shoot that fuse off or we're going to die here.
And I like how the reveal after that, where it's like, he just lights the rest of the fuse off and the fuse just goes to the end. And he's like, well, I guess it was a dud. And it's like, you know that he knew that it was a fuck up. Like it wasn't filled. Like it was practice. It was to get him to actually pay attention and do the right fucking thing. Cause when you see him first shooting those guns, you can see that he has an idea of how to shoot a gun, but He does not know how to trick shoot. And then the shots just go all over the fucking place.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, this guy. Yeah. And it's like, he's
good, but he's not great.
Yeah. There's no montage where it kind of shows us him working on the scene. There is, which I love. There is a song at the beginning of the film during the whole pan across the dead of the train attack, which I thought was, you know, it's not a Kioma style song, but it's definitely a Italian spaghetti Western kind of, like, this song is specifically played here over the next minute and a half to kind of explain to us what we're getting into. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's great. But yeah, I can agree with you. Like, I feel that the Maria Martin character is kind of brought in very much just as like a witness to kind of wrap up the. Okay. So no, like I said, like, you know, the Maria Martin character, her, she's just pretty much brought. Like, it would have been nice if we saw her earlier in the film, mm-hmm. like the maybe the first time we were in when he's doing the whole thing. If she was kind of just a person that was working also, and they're like, oh hi, you know, like he kind of introduces him to the new Ricky, and it's like, okay, that makes more sense now when we find her, we see her later in the film, like half hour or something like that,
or even at the beginning of the movie, like when. Mm-hmm. And this was something that kind of bothered me, but it wasn't major. But, you know, Billy Kane is always like bragging about how he doesn't leave any witnesses. Yeah. Well, he never goes into the car where Martin was. Martin came out.
Right.
And there were still two people left alive in there. You can see them standing in the window watching what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe make her one of those characters.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just anything to kind of connect her
to the rest of the character.
Now that you're talking to me about it, now you're bringing this up, is that the character, you know, when she gets reintroduced, she introduces herself to Ricky, they do have like this weird, like she's met him before. So it's like, it doesn't really connect. Like, it was definitely something maybe in the screenplay that they wrote in and then took out, but they're like, we still have this female character. How are we going to introduce her? And like, we're not going to explain it properly. And it's like, okay, but it's like, you know, most people are like, whatever, like who's really paying attention to that? Like, she's a character, like she's a female, who cares? You know, it's the '60s. It's like, whatever, like you should be in the kitchen or some shit. Yeah. You know, you should be running a brothel that runs from town to town. What the fuck? Like, I love that. They're like showgirls, but like, you can definitely tell when you have that scene in the saloon where she goes in with the girls and everybody's very happy to see her. And the girls are pretty much flirting with all the guys that are in the bar. And that's kind of her MO, is just bringing like her three or four girls from town to town to kind of, I guess you can keep the men happy, but they're not like stuck in a saloon. Like most, like that's kind of the most unique thing of this, is because most of the time the prostitutes are like, you know, housed in the second floor of the saloon, where it's like pretty much you go there for drinks and kind of a show. And then you have another show when you go upstairs. And these girls just pretty much go from town to town, kind of doing, perusing their wares and kind of making money as they go.
Well, and that was the thing. It seemed more like they were dancers versus like saloon, like the saloon girls there to sell drinks and what have you,
mm-hmm.
or to be prostitutes. It seemed more like they were there as entertainers. They had the piano player and they would get on stage and do the can dance, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, yeah, you didn't get the feeling that there's anything salacious about this group of women going around, which, like, again, is something different. You know, normally, if you're going to have a woman, you know, these women in these movies,
mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, they're either a prostitute or, you know, or they're so weak.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like clinging to whatever man is going to protect them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, the character is really strong. She's, you know, very independent. She's got her own, I mean, she's basically a business owner going around, you know, doing her thing, entertaining people. And, you know, and plus she's a hell of a lot smarter than, you know, most of the male characters. And
definitely.
You know, she's got a good head on her shoulders. She's,
right.
And so it's really refreshing. And again, I just kind of have got like to have seen more.
Yeah, more of her. Yeah, it would have been nice. Yeah.
See how you fit her puzzle piece into the rest of the scene a little
better. But it's also like I was looking when you were talking, it was like four people wrote the screenplay for this film. So it's like a typical kind of Italian, you know, thing where there's like four or five people written the screenplay. So certain things probably got pulled last minute, but they already had this actress, like, you know, cast. So it's like
Delamano wasn't a writer on this, was he?
No, he was not.
Which is another thing that you're kind of missing here is the director normally has their fingerprints on the screenplay a lot of the times, especially, you know, definitely with Leone, you know, Leone, Argento, Fulci, you know, they're really involved in the story.
His following films after this, I think he does have a piece of, he's either in the film, he's either working on the screenplay with the writers or whatnot. Because I'm looking through the rest of his CV, and he's pretty much the rest of these films, the ones that kind of people know him for, he's either, you know, the co-writer, or, you know, his name is third or fourth within the thing. So maybe it could have also kind of like been a contractual thing. Like, I don't know, like he was just probably just like, hey, we have this film, we don't have a director for it, do you want to do it?
Yeah, you were giving it a shot, you know, because
give him his chance.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at his pedigree up to this point, it's pretty fucking impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, basically, this whole genre exists because of the movie he worked on.
Yeah, the one
cinematographer, Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah, the
first Fistful of Dollars created this genre.
Yeah, for a few dollars more, he made right before this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, so you definitely know. Like, there's a couple other films that he made before this, but as a Western, For a Few Dollars More was right before this. So, like, if you're like, okay, well, you showed us that you can, you know, you're shooting really great films. Why don't we try to give you the opportunity to make a film? But we're only making Westerns at the time. So it's like, okay, so go crazy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's like everything else after this film, he pretty much had a hand in with the screenplay. So,
and like I said, B.O., I'm not as steeped in his filmography as you are, but the two other movies I've seen from him, Venus and Furs, as far as softcore kind of thing, I mean, it's really well done.
Yeah,
and of course, Solange, fucking great movie.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, that, and then what have you done to your daughters is just a great kind of continuation on that.
I'm going to have to check that one out because I'm really curious about that now.
Mm-hmm. So I think besides that, I think we both enjoyed the film, and I think it was so getting to where you can watch this film, it's on Tubi, and like a kind of a, you know, the great thing about Tubi is that it's this weird cavalcade of like good presentations of films. And then I
swear they need to be paying us.
But like the copy that's on Tubi is this kind of beat up old VHS copy. Right.
It wasn't as bad as,
it was
some of the cuts I've seen
there, but it was like full frame. So it was kind of like, and then I know that there's an Arrow Blu-ray out because they put out this box set called Vengeance Trials.
It just came out in 2021.
Yeah, so it's got that in Massacre Time. I know when I was doing
Didn't it have one of the Kinski movies? God Sent the Cain, I think, is
on that set. God Sent the Cain is on that set. Yeah, there's another film too. There's like four Westerns. But like what I was reading about that set is that the sad part is that like the UK UK collectors got fucked on that set.
Oh, really?
So if you go on YouTube and you find this, you'll find many different versions, the same film, but many different versions, like just quality anyway.
Yeah.
Like the Tubi cut is on there. So it's the full frame kind of VHS rip. There is a better version of that version on YouTube. And then there are the Arrow rips of that film on YouTube, and they're both versions. So when the film was released in the box set, when it was released in the UK, part of the BBFC's like whole thing now is that they don't like showing animal cruelty in films. So that whole opening sequence, you know, the whole attack on the train, when a horse gets shot or a person gets knocked down with the horse, the whole damn thing goes black right before it happens. So you'll still have the audio, but then the screen goes black because it's a BBFC regulation. So everybody who picked up this box set in the UK got a kind of censored cut of the film. But then when it got released here in the States at the same time, they did not they released the film uncensored because they didn't have to worry about animal cruelty, you know, violations in America.
And there's
which is bizarre because I watched because it's on YouTube. I was watching it. And I was like, why does this just go black in these scenes? And I'm like, what the hell? And then I found another the same copy of the one I just watched today. And I was like, oh, this is just completely the whole film. There's no issues with the train sequence. And then I was reading online that when they released the box set, that both the UK cut had to censor those scenes because of the BBFC. And I was like, that's fucking bullshit. Like, that sucks. Like,
yeah,
the film was made almost what
I'd heard about this years ago because the Iron Maiden video for I believe The Trooper or Run to the Hills, one of the two, features footage from the movie and They Died with Their Boots On.
Yeah,
I think the old Errol Flynn movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they're using like clips from this movie from the 40s or 50s.
Yeah,
but the BBC is censoring it because of the horse scenes. But then they showed that exact same movie, like right before the video show with the Iron Maiden video is like,
it makes they're no so weird. Sense. And this film was like over 50.
I love my British friends.
Yeah,
they're cool people. Johnny T, you're awesome. But yeah, y'all are so fucked up when it comes to movies, man. It's like so fucking weird.
And it's.
Over here we're hung up on nudity, but
right, yeah. But this film is over 50 years old, and it's still. And you're like, being able to watch an uncensored copy of it, and it's just the only reason it's being censored is because there are a couple of animals that get flipped, and it's like, I mean, and I understand. I get people who get upset by that. I get it. Like, the fact that like, you know, there should have been a much safer way to do these things, but they were also kind of reproducing what was being done in the Wild West because that's kind of what happened. Animals, horses were just kind of a dime a dozen. They were transport. They weren't like fucking when an animal died. They just kind of, you know, the guy put his fucking saddle on his back and carry it to the next town and see if he had enough money to buy another horse. He would buy another horse. Like if he didn't, he would just sell his saddle and fucking try to, you know, he would stay in town for a while and kind of make money somehow. Like that's how they did it. Like it's legit to the time period. But I can understand people being upset by that, but like,
horses absurd. Were tools.
Yeah. It's absurd. Not it's like
pets.
Yeah. And like, you know, nowadays, like with CGI and everything like that, I do enjoy the fact that like, I mean, yes, it can 90% of it can be wonky, but they've gotten so good with it now that they don't even use animals in films. They just CGI the hell out of it because it's, you know, it's much more safer for everyone on set to have like, you know, even though it's a domesticated animal, you still can have issues with a horse or a fucking any kind of just kind of like, you know, birds or whatnot, you can have issues. So now they just CGI it all, which is like, you know, interesting. So you have that rarity now where it's like a live animal is used in a film, it's mostly just for like, you know, oh, that's, you know, in a field, we're not going to even go near it. We're just taking shots of it.
Yeah.
It's like, but censoring just these three or four shots of these animals going down is so absurd to me. And it's like, you know, and it's a good film. Like it's a great film for the whole reason of it all. And like, you can understand why Arrow would put this out in a box set like this, because they have put out a bunch of his other films. And it's like, why don't we just, you know, like we have the other weird Westerns that we have, and they all kind of work. Cause they're all kind of like vengeance and kind of retaliation films, revenge films. So it's like, but I don't know. I think it's just totally absurd. It's just a government overreach and whatnot. But yeah, but besides that,
like, fucking Mary Whitehouse and her bullshit.
But besides that, I really enjoy this. Like I've said this to you before, like I'm a fan of this director, and I've always, when I can continue finding things, I'm looking through his CV, and he did like a Teenage Emmanuel film that came out like prior, like I think the year before he died. Like, I think it was one of the last films he actually worked on before his death. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, it's just like a, you know, it's a teen, it's a sex comedy. And I'm like, I think I need to try to find that. Yeah. It's like, and then I have to send you a picture of the poster. Like, the poster looks mental. Like, it's also known as Annie. I'm like, oh my God, this looks fucking great. Like, if I can, yeah, I got to send you a picture of this.
You mean poster. Like the little redheaded orphan?
No, it's, yeah.
That'd be funny to get those two confused when gathered around the family.
Okay.
Yeah,
Grandpa, get your pants back on, Grandpa. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the little orphan girl has gone around the world fucking everything that moves.
Oh my God. But like, do you have a pick for next time?
I was going to sit down and come up with one. All right, real quick, just a bit of trivia that I think is fun.
All right.
Enrico Salerno, who played Richard Martin, was actually the actor who overdubbed Clint Eastwood in the Dollars movies in the Italian versions. So he was the man with no name. So nice little tie in there with Delamano being on those films as well. Cool. So anyway, I thought that was cool.
That's awesome.
I tell you what, I do not remember how good this movie is or bad it is, but it's one I've been meaning to rewatch. Okay. 1993, Mickey Rourke, The Last Outlaw.
Okay.
I have not seen it since 93. It was made for HBO movie.
Okay.
But I've been wanting to rewatch it, and I had a couple choices, but this is one I really want to rewatch to see if it's as good as I seem to remember it being.
Yeah, all right. I have it on my watch list on Letterboxd because I must have saw something about it, and I was like, "Ooh, this looks like the Jeff Murphy film, right?"
Yeah,
I did The Quiet Earth and Free Jack. Okay, definitely. All right, yeah.
Yeah, the cast on this one is pretty outstanding. So I
think. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's pretty killer. Delmer Mulrooney and Ted Levine, John McGinley, Steve Buscemi. Mm-hmm. Keith David. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nice.
Yeah. It's always fun to see John C. McGinley in something that's not a comedy.
No, definitely.
Because it always throws me off. It was like, why aren't you being funny, dude?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. We can do that.
Yeah. So that's my pick for next month. And
awesome.
Next time I'll be more prepared.
Yes, because it'll be your turn.
Actually, next time I pick, it will be a Klaus Kinski Western, probably either The Great Silence or In God Save the King. But
okay, cool.
But for now, let's go with Last
Outlaw. So, we have any feedback? I'm guessing no.
Probably not. No, I don't know if anyone listens to the show.
Yeah. But is there any way that people can get in touch with us if they want?
They sure can, Vaughn. All they have to do is send an email to jafmpodcast@gmail.com or call us on the voicemail line at 304-769-9006. How about that? I fucking remember that this month.
Awesome.
So feel free to send us some feedback and we'll be happy to share your thoughts with the rest of the four people that might listen to this.
All right, and with that, we are running off in the sunset, unknown and unnamed. Our bodies, the real bodies of us, are laid out in the streets, and some woman's going to tell the cops that we've been dead this whole time. But besides that, for Stephen Thompson, I hope you all enjoyed this, and yeehaw.
I'm a bear. Time in the killing fields, ripping the cover from the cell seal. Yeah, I'm a bad man.